You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live
for the last time
in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Jessica Bruder from Harper's Magazine, writing on the end of retirement. Also on the program today, Scott Walker. Wah, wah. Chris Christie's going to visit my state. Who cares? I want money. And while Chris Christie has not answered his prayers, Sheldon Adelson to the rescue.
Hey, let's go give that kid that looks like the grown-up version of the boy from Deliverance another check.
There you go. Also, with just 7 days away from the midterm elections, more reminder as to why Sam Brownback should be voted out of office, has cut Medicaid disability rolls in his grand scheme. His Laffer Curve scheme. New report out. The U.S. Post Office receiving over 50,000 requests to monitor mail from U.S. police, national security agencies. Just this in this past year alone. Great story on what happens when you pay people a living wage for fast food coming out of Denmark. And finally, some accountability. Top cop at Rikers Island has lost his job. We'll get to that CIA harboring Nazis as late as the 1990s today as well. And that story on Americans not taking their vacation time. A little bit of house cleaning before. This is our final day broadcasting from this office. We've been in this office for 4 years. A little bit sad, but also not so sad, because I guess there's a little bit of Stockholm syndrome. You've been locked in isolation for 4 years. In a closet, and you start to miss, like, oh, I'm going to miss that pile of whatever that was in the corner there. And, oh, I'm going to miss the toxins that I've been sucking in from that air conditioning unit when we could barely use it. And
I'm going to miss the location more than anything.
Yeah, me too. We're going to have to find a new Dollar Lunch District. We're going to be moving over the next couple of days. Our members will get archive shows, some deep archives, some past archives. An interview that I was doing for Ring of Fire this week. There'll be no shows for Freebie folks. We'll be back on Friday, perhaps with our special Halloween show. Cliff will probably join us on Monday of next week. Folks, and we'll be in touch with you shortly about a fundraiser to help us build out the new office. In the meantime, I want you to write something down. www.majorityreportcotv.com. COTV for Call Out the Vote. We are partnering with the PCCC and hoping that you folks will help and get out the vote efforts across the country. The program is called Call Out the Vote. Volunteers have made already 2 million calls. The candidates range from people like Al Franken and Bruce Braley, Shanna Bellows, Mark Udall, Jeff Merkley, the first senator to come out in favor of legalizing marijuana. The idea is attempting to win in states like South Dakota, Iowa, and Colorado, and leading the way ultimately to 2016, where we're going to see a far more, and we already are seeing a more progressive Senate caucus than we have in years. And 2016 may be a big payday for those of us who are hoping to see even more progressives in the Senate. So it is COTV, Majority Report, COTV.com. It's not set up yet. It'll be set up hopefully later today. Write this down. All you got to do there, you go there, you fill out your name. They will send you instructions. You can do get out the vote from your own home over the next week. Be a part of it, folks. Be a part of it. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jessica Bruder. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. We know that Social Security is one of the most effective anti-poverty programs in the United States. And one of the most effective retirement programs I think our government has ever done. However, it was designed to be part of a, they say, the three-legged stool. And sadly, those other two legs of the stool, savings and private retirement accounts, have begun to fail in increasing rates. And with us now is Jessica Bruder. She teaches at the Columbia Journalism School. She's a journalist herself and has written The End of Retirement, When You Can't Afford to Stop Working, in the August edition of Harper's Magazine. Jessica, welcome to the program. Oh, Jessica, are you there?
I am.
Okay,
great. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Right.
So the piece is really heartbreaking. You you went out across the country to follow and find folks who are basically working through their retirement or just barely surviving. Let's start with Linda May. Tell us about Linda May.
Sure. Linda's amazing. Linda's 64. A few years ago, she realized that when she was eligible for Social Security, it was only going to be about $499 a month. We're not in an era of secure retirement finance. Linda never accrued a pension, something that used to be pretty common and is now much less so as defined benefit pensions give way to 401ks and other stuff. But although she'd worked all her life, Linda really had nothing to fall back on. She was working at Home Depot as a cashier, making $10.50 an hour, and pretty much realized that was her life until the day she died, unless she made a change. She was living in a trailer. She was pretty miserable. She decided to change things up by saving up for an RV. She got one pretty cheap. It had just been driven into a telephone pole, so it had this big crater on the front. But Linda's done construction. She knows how to fix stuff like that. So she basically struck out on the road, like a lot of the people I met. And she went to work for something called Camper Force.
Now,
the Amazon
before we get to
Force.
That, just tell us, I mean, just give us a sense of what her employment history had been.
Oh, she'd done all sorts of stuff. She'd been a building inspector, a general contractor. She'd been a cocktail waitress. She'd owned a flooring store. She'd been an insurance executive. She's kind of a Jill of all trades and very, very resilient.
And this idea to strike out on the camper came from a guy named Bob Wells. Tell us a little bit about Bob Wells.
Bob is amazing. Bob used to work in a Safeway up in Alaska. He was a union clerk making a reasonable wage, but when he got divorced, he'd been the sole source of income for his family and basically couldn't support a split family, though he'd been able to comfortably support an intact one. So he ended up moving into a box van and living in the parking lot of the Safeway while he continued to work. Now, the interesting thing is he was at first pretty freaked out. You know, am I going to be a social pariah? What does this mean? I'm living in a van. And then basically got into it and has since become a guru for the van dwelling set. He started a website called cheaprvliving.com that Linda May came across and helped inspire her change. But basically, some of the people Bob knew were making it on $500 a month or less by traveling, living in a van, paring down their expenses, and just being out on the road permanently. So that's where Linda got her idea.
And so you followed Linda to Fernley, Nevada. What was in Fernley, Nevada?
I initially went to Fernley because I'd heard about Camper Force. That's Amazon has a warehouse in Fernley, which is about a half an hour from Reno. And it's a gigantic distribution hub. It's so big that they call half of it Utah and half of it Nevada because it's just massive. And when the holidays come, they need extra labor. It's their peak shipping season starts in the fall and runs right up till Christmas. And one of the ways they've started getting extra people in, this started in 2008. Timing, I don't think, is a coincidence with the recession. But they basically started hiring RVers, so itinerant workers. Most of them live on the road full time. And a lot of them, as I saw when I went to visit the RV parks where they live, are of what in another era would have been considered retirement age or close to it.
And so, did you get a sense? I mean, is there any way really to get a sense of just how many people? I mean, if you've already got sort of like these institutions that are now being set up for this demographic. I mean, and I think at one point you mentioned that it's somewhat reminiscent of Grapes of Wrath in a way, where you've got these migrating workers, except for in this instance they're all seniors. And one of the things that's fascinating about your story is it goes from sort of Grapes of Wrath into sort of almost Easy Rider in some fashion. But
yeah, I call it nickel and dimed meets on the road.
Yeah. So I mean, do we have a sense of how many people make up or in similar situations?
It's really hard to tell exactly because I mean, counting nomads is a challenge. They don't all go to one place. They don't all have to sign up with, you know, there's no national nomad registry. But one thing that I look at is the growth of these individual programs. So, for example, Amazon's program started in 2008 with just a handful of these people. And now, according to what a recruiter told me at one of their they go to Quartzsite, Arizona to do some recruiting. I was told that the headcount is now up to 2,000. The Sugar Beet Harvest, which also hires people in this situation, they were seeking to hire 600 people for this year's harvest, up from 450 the year before. So the fact that we see these programs growing, I believe, suggests the same for the overall population. Again, it's hard to say because that's demand and who knows exactly what the supply of labor is, but it's certainly convenient for employers. I mean, you've got a plug-and-play workforce. People show up with their homes. They're not around long enough to organize, and when the jobs are gone, they're gone too. So in a way, it's a large company's dream in terms of flexible labor.
So give
to
us
have this available.
So give us a notion of what a sort of living, I guess, as part of the camper force is like.
Sure. So a lot of these people show up in the early fall. Some of them even late August, I believe now, and a few different warehouses around the country. Basically, when you're near one of these warehouses, all the RV parks and trailer parks that are remotely nearby will be full. In Fernley, I visited an RV park called the Desert Rose, and I believe some of the spaces there had been booked for maybe a year out. People were just planning and ready to go. So you've got these trailer parks that become ephemeral company towns. They're full of RVs. They're full of, they get these tiny economies where people who aren't working in the warehouses will be working by walking dogs or cooking meals or helping people fix their RVs. So you get this micro economy. And meanwhile, most of the people are working in the warehouse. There are day shifts, there are night shifts. Some of the jobs involve walking as much as 15 miles on concrete floors during the day. I did meet a bunch of people who'd gotten injuries. Linda May was still wearing a brace on her wrist from using the UPC scanner six weeks, after she'd been there. I met people who'd gotten trigger finger injuries, stuff like that, like a lot of repetitive motion tasks.
And they get treated. There's literally a company infirmary that I guess is now, I mean, I wonder, like, how much of that infirmary is geared towards, more oriented towards geriatric care?
It's hard to say because I know they have tons and tons of temps and just the regular staff, too. I think it's probably in there for liability reasons, to be honest. I think it's not necessarily all geriatric, but certainly Linda had to use it once. In fact, she was feeling super faint on the job, had to go there. They put her in an ambulance and actually took her out to a hospital in Reno. Couldn't figure out quite what was wrong with her, but seemed related to the work because she kept getting dizzy. So it seems that it's there to catch whoever's having trouble with the labor, but I don't know that I'd say it's old age specific.
And you talk about how there are, websites, Worker on Wheels, Work Camper News, where people get classifieds. Where do people end up working? I mean, it's not just these Amazon and these and the Crystal Sugar company.
Yeah, they go all over the place. So apart from Amazon and the Sugar Beet Harvest, which are two pretty big employers, you'll see ads. They're trying to get people to sell Christmas trees. So, you know, those roadside stands where it's come get the Christmas tree, strap it to the roof of the station wagon. The people who are manning those stands will sometimes be work campers selling Halloween pumpkins, 4th of July fireworks. Work campers pick raspberries, blueberries. They get hired to guard gates at Texas oil fields. That's a big one, gate guarding, because basically they log all of the truck traffic coming in and off the oil field. So that's a 24-hour job that often they hire couples to do that, and the couple will live in an RV right at the gate and be logging people all the time. One of the other huge jobs would be camp hosting. So you've got private concessionaires and the U.S. Forest Service and the Army Corps of Engineers, and they hire work campers to maintain hundreds of campgrounds all across the country and up into Canada.
And some of the folks that you came across, I guess it was in Fernley, and in Las Vegas, are part of that lawsuit that dealing with Amazon's security measures. Just tell us a little bit about that. And I wonder if this is an indication that there's at least some impetus to perhaps organize in some fashion.
Well, that's interesting. I talked to Mark Dierman, who's I might be butchering his last name. It looks like Thierman. Apologies, Mark. But he's the labor attorney who's handling the case that you're speaking about. And basically, there is a lawsuit right now. You've got Amazon employees who are arguing they're owed back wages because they spend often as much as 25 minutes in line waiting to leave the plant at the end of a shift because Amazon puts them through a pretty rigorous security process to make sure that they haven't, you know, shoplifted anything, essentially. But, you know, that's not considered on the clock time, even though it eats out of the day, and they're suing for back wages. To the best of my knowledge, none of the itinerant workers are involved in the suit, which doesn't surprise me. Again, they are hard to organize. They're on the road. They're mobile. It's not a group that's unified in quite the same way as somebody who's in a fixed spot doing a job for more than a couple months at a time. And when I talked to the attorney, work campers hadn't even been on his radar. I mentioned that population to him, and he said that it didn't surprise him that everybody in that plant is pretty much a mouse on a treadmill, but that he hadn't come across any yet in his organizing of the workers for the lawsuit.
And so you follow May and I guess some of these other folks to Quartzsite, Arizona. Tell us about Quartzsite.
Quartzsite is a wild place. The funny thing was I kept hearing about it. It reminded me of, you know, if you go to a Passover Seder, you'll hear next year in Jerusalem. It was always this winter in Quartzsite, this winter in Quartzsite. Everyone's going to Quartzsite. I heard this everywhere I went in Fernley when I'm interviewing, you know, when I was interviewing people in the RVs. And I kept saying, what's Quartzsite? And nobody was really explaining it that well. One guy told me it was Burning Man for geezers. And I figured if all the people that I was interested in, you know, if they were all going there, I probably should just go figure it out myself. So I got a tent and went and lived in the desert in Quartzsite for about 3 weeks last January. Quartzsite is a town in the Sonoran Desert in Arizona. It has been popular with snowbirds and retirees for a long time just because of the temperature. And as the economy's fallen out, it's also gotten popular with people of retirement age who can camp there for free. So basically, while there are RV parks in town, what a lot of people do is they boondock. Boondocking is dry camping. It means you don't have any utility hookups. Some people use generators or solar panels. And they can do that for free in a bunch of areas around the town that are designated federal desert land. So it's become a magnet. There, in January each year, the jobs are getting pretty scarce. The Amazon jobs are over. A lot of the campsites aren't full because it's cold in most of the country. So a lot of these people who are doing temporary jobs are essentially furloughed. So many of them gather in Quartzsite, and that's where I went to catch up with them.
And so let's talk a little bit about, I mean, before we sort of return to, I guess, like, you know, what is the future for these folks? Let's just more broadly speak about the notion of retirement. I mean, I'm curious as to, like, how much of the perspective that these folks have, do they perceive this as a problem that is sort of larger than their own personal decisions? You know, I've spoken to people who have gone across the country and talked to people whose homes in the following of the financial crisis were in foreclosure, and they have dipped into poverty, in and out of poverty from what was a stable middle class life, and I'm curious as to how these people see themselves. Is it that they are in this situation because of personal decisions, or do they see this as something more systemically wrong?
I think it's really a mix. I mean, people are quite unique the way they interpret their circumstances. I mean, you know, I talked to people who told me some pretty rough financial tales and then would tell me, you know, I'm doing this by choice. This is freedom. A lot of people, I think, seek agency in difficult circumstances. Then you've got people who really did contextualize it. I met a gentleman named David Roderick, who was 77 years old and working at Amazon and had been a State Department fellow doing overseas education stuff for years. And he was reading, you know, books about the death of retirement and Social Security and really had a sense of how people like him might be part of a broader economic wave. I talked to one guy who had lost his home in basically the housing collapse and said that when he got to Amazon, he felt like suddenly he was in the matrix, that he saw the reality, basically that he'd woken up to what the economy meant while so many others were still sleeping. So you do have people like that. And you also have people who just say, this is my life. I'm thinking about it on the day to day and doing the best I can. And you know, who don't really contextualize it.
And what of these folks' families? I mean, are they? I mean, what is their perspective to the extent that they have children who are out with their own families? I mean, what is their perspective in that regard?
One thing that was really interesting, I was interviewing a pastor who runs a soup kitchen in Quartzsite, Pastor Mike. And when I asked him, you know, what is Quartzsite? The first thing he said was, it's a cheap place to hide. And I was thinking to myself, well, these people aren't on the lam. What do you mean? You know, they're not bandits hiding from people. And he was talking about people hiding from their families. He said in some cases he saw situations where families and, you know, adult children didn't realize how rough things were getting for their parents who were trying to put a happy face on it and showed up in Quartzsite and were kind of shocked by the situation. A lot of people, I just don't think, you know, it's not like their kids are having an easy time of it. A lot of people are very proud, don't want to fall back on their kids. Some people have lived on and off with their kids, but found that, you know, they were couch surfing or there wasn't enough room. And basically this was kind of a bid at independence and freedom, even if it meant not having a permanent home, just getting out on the road.
And so what do people do in the future? I mean, you touch on this in your piece. I mean, this is, I mean, you're talking mostly to people in their late 50s, their 60s, their mm-hmm. 70s. What happens after that?
Yeah, I'm a little scared to know the answer in some cases. I mean, I'm sure some back in the days before Social Security, pre-New Deal era, you had two choices when you got old, unless you happened to be fabulously wealthy, which was quite rare. You would either fall back on your family or you would go to the poorhouse. And the poorhouse was pretty much a Dickensian nightmare. Now, the poorhouse doesn't exist anymore. I do still think a lot of people fall back on family. They try to stay independent for as long as they can. But when they're unable to work, things get a little more difficult. They might be mobility impaired. They will fall back on family, even if it's something they would have tried to delay for as long as possible. There's actually an RV community in Texas where they provide medical care for older people who've had to get off the road. That's pretty small, though. That's not a trend that I've seen growing. And then there's some really scary stories. When I was out on the road, I talked to a couple people who knew of folks who passed away in their RVs. There was one guy who was found in a Walmart parking lot, another who was found on the gravel terraces of Ehrenberg, not far from Quartzsite, in his RV. He'd been staying at the soup kitchen in Quartzsite for a while and had just gone out there by himself. So it's a little scary. I think the future is uncertain, and it'll be interesting to see how people, you know, these are very creative, resilient people, but it's still not going to be an easy situation.
Did you get a sense in the course of writing this story? I mean, you know, you are writing about people who are incredibly creative and resilient, but I imagine that they are sort of outliers. I mean, that to the extent, you know, when we look at the data and we see that this generation who are headed into what we used to call retirement, I guess, at least in the, you know, the past 70 years, are in worse shape than their parents in some respects heading into mm-hmm. retirement. I mean, do we have a sense of like what everyone else is doing? I mean, we're talking about a small subset of people who have figured it out to a certain extent what they're going to do. By necessity, but what of the rest?
Sure. I mean, I don't even think of these people as quite that secure. I mean, it's interesting when I talked to Monique Morrissey at the Economic Policy Institute. She was telling me this is the first ever reversal in retirement security in modern American history, which means exactly what you're saying, that, you know, each generation is becoming more precarious than the last instead of more stable. That means some pretty scary stuff. Another economist I talked to, Teresa Gilarducci at the New School, said that, you know, about half of middle-class Americans, when they retire, are going to have a food budget as little as $5 a day. So it's pretty scary. I mean, what people are doing is, you know, imagine if Linda May hadn't struck out on the road. She'd probably still be working at Home Depot for as long as she could, living in this $600 a month trailer, feeling isolated, and she would probably keep on doing that until she could no longer do it.
It's not a pretty picture. And I wonder what it's going to take. I mean, because, you know, here you have a group of people who are, you know, I don't want to say uniquely, but are particularly sort of self-motivated and brave, frankly. I mean, this is you have no idea what you're doing when you say, I'm going to save what little money I have and bet it on, you know, a camper, essentially, lasting for the next 15, 20 some odd years or something. I'm just struck by the dynamic of organizing and where they see themselves politically, because, you know, we know that these people are hanging on barely, and some of them aren't even, I guess, by the meager payments they get with Social Security. Yet to the extent that we hear Social Security talked about, it is as often, if not more often, talking about cutting the cost of living increases as anything else. I wonder how this changes. I mean, I wonder, is there a point where there is some type of organizing to sort of say, like, or is it that the struggle for survival at this age becomes so paramount that political organizing sort of is a luxury that they just don't have?
That's pretty much what I was seeing. I mean, when you're working an overnight shift on concrete, your whole body hurts. These RVs I visited were tricked out like mini apothecaries. You see a bottle of ibuprofen. I talked to one woman who was taking, you know, forgive me, I forget if it's ibuprofen or aspirin, but 4 in the morning and then 4 after work. And, you know, it's a pretty day-to-day thing. I think it's harder to think about the meta picture. It's hard to think about where is the country going. It's more about how am I going to, you know, fill my fridge this week so I can keep going.
Well, it's an incredibly important piece. It's in Harper's Magazine, the August issue. I think you can. I think there's a firewall online, but you can. Folks should sign up and get Harper's anyway if you haven't subscribed to the the print version. And it's really a piece that's particularly important for those of us who aren't in retirement yet, while we still have the sort of, I guess, the luxury of organizing politically, because this seems to be just a major crisis that of retirement that society just has not seemingly woken up to.
Yeah, no, it's a huge issue. It's a huge issue, and one that for a long time people have been pretty silent on. So,
Jessica Bruder,
I'm glad to see that starting to change.
Jessica Bruder from Harper's, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, folks. Cutting a little bit early today because it's our moving day. We've got to start to box up stuff here. I want to remind you that it is your memberships that keep this show alive. We cannot do it without you, and we need your help. We are getting the most low-cost movers we can. It is the firm of Matt and Mike Movers. I have
prefer the moving company to be called Binder and Brooks. That's more of a moving company type.
Binder and Brooks.
Law firm. I don't know about moving company.
I am going to pick up the cargo van.
Three Jews in a truck.
That's right.
Well, 2.5 Jews in a truck. Yeah.
I'm going to be picking up the cargo van. I have been, over the past couple of days, bringing into the office my hand truck and my dolly, and it is really it would have been nice to have a videographer here to see that we have shot a couple of videos to which we will hopefully edit in the next couple of days, and we're going to be using for our fundraiser to show the quality of the office that we're moving from. The new place is actually significantly nicer, but we're paying less per square foot because it's in Brooklyn, but it is bigger. And so our rent is actually going up, not too much more from where they were going to charge us here. But we're hoping to have like a legit video background. We're hoping to, in the coming months, to produce some more audio shows that will be different but of similar sensibility to this one. All of this will only be possible with your support. So if you can, if you have the financial means to become a member, join the Majority Report today. You can join at majority.fm or simply go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, which, you know, the least you could do is take some of that money from Jeff Bezos and kick it back to us. Not my favorite company, but I know many people use it. And so if you are going to use it to buy whatever it is you buy from them, go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the link. We get a kickback at the very least. And also justcoffee.coop, a company that I wholly endorse. A, because it's got great coffee. B, because you're drinking great coffee that is fair trade. Everybody gets a fair wage throughout the entire process. C, it's an employee-owned company. D, because you get 10% off when you use the coupon code MAJORITY. And E, if I'm not mistaken, follows D, you can get the Majority Report blend, which makes a great Christmas or Hanukkah or Eid gift. Well, I guess not so much Eid, right? Caffeine. But you can get tea and chocolate.
Boom.
And winter solstice.
That's right.
Or you could just give it to somebody. Why not just give people a gift, for God's sakes?
Yeah, don't just be a decent human being. Get a gift. Come on.
And you give them the Majority Report blend. It's great coffee. And you're secretly inculcating them. Bring it home for Thanksgiving. You got time. Hey, Uncle Crazy Guy. I know that we disagree about politics, and I know you spend your day watching Fox News, but I just wanted to say, here's some great coffee.
Is that the real name of an actual cedar? Uncle Crazy Guy?
Yes. Uncle Crazy Guy Cedar. Uncle Crazy Guy Cedar passed away, but we still have Uncle Crazy Guy, different last name. And then there's also, hey, person, I'm not going to say specifics, crazy guy in-law. Or maybe Lawyer Matthew will give it to Indie Mike. There you go. Support the program in any way that you can, folks. We're going to take a break. 646-257-3920 is the number. I want to remind you, it is the site, if you want to get involved in doing some calls to get the vote out over the next week, you can do as much or as little as you want, is MajorityReportCOTV.com. That's MajorityReportCOTV. COTV standing for calling out the vote. It's like get out the vote, but it's calling out the vote. The site should be up by the end of the day. You can get involved as much or as little as you want. Do the calls while, I don't know, watching your favorite news program or listening to this show. Although that would be tricky. But very important races out there. And we will be back live Friday with perhaps our special Halloween show. I don't want to give anything away. All right, 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me through the app, which, you can, of course, you can get at majorityapp.com. Or you can IM us through Instant Messenger at majorityfm. This is generally where Matt plays the music.
One last time.
What? No, it's not one last time. You're making it sound like, yeah, in the studio. I mean, most people aren't going to notice.
We're just leaving this studio. It's not big. It's big for us.
I'm getting sentimental about it, too.
All right, here we go.
Really?
I'm not going to see the same people in this building.
I'll miss the dude at the door. He's a good guy.
Yes.
Adolfo's a great guy.
The guy at the door is great. I saw the UPS guy.
UPS guy.
Oh, the UPS guy.
I tried
to
hug him. Not interested. He didn't seem nearly as sentimental as I thought he
was. He's like, all right, we'll just move.
I was like, dude, we're moving. Oh, yeah? When? Oh, Wednesday. Okay. That's it. 4 years of bringing us the UPS boxes, and that's it?
Means nothing to you?
Couldn't believe it.
Relate to those guys. I have no sentimentality about this at all.
Dollar pizza today too, I think. I don't know what we're going to do for food over there.
Well, we'll actually have fish there, so we'll actually bring
it. It's going to be a lot of brown bagging it.
Things have been so shit. Funny, man.
You're going to be brown bagging it over there. Our own bathrooms.
We could show what we all have for lunch, like Matt's sort of like sugar concoction, and my like.
I don't think Matt's lunch is going to change dramatically. It's
no,
just
like
be
his fast food or whatever he's bringing.
Subway sandwiches 90% of the time. There is, fortunately for Matt, like three different places where you can get energy drinks.
My like homemade, like you know, salad with rotisserie chicken or whatever, and you and your like egg and apple. Egg and apple.
It's egg and apple.
Yep.
That's all I eat.
Boiled egg, apple.
Are we going to get a fridge, maybe? The mini fridge for the
There's already one there.
There's already one there.
Sadly, we're not going to be able to plug it in because we pay electricity. But if you bring in cooler packs...
All right.
It'll stay warm.
I guess it's time to go to the better half officially.
All right, we'll be right back, folks.